Okay, great to see everybody back after a two-week hiatus. I hope some of you were able to at least hear some of the Divrei Torah on the WhatsApp. We tried to send it out for Shabbos both weeks. One week I had a little more time, one week I had a little less time. But as usual, with Rav Salvechik's commentary on the Parsha, there are going to be some themes that are going to continue to show up throughout the entire Parsha. Let's begin with a theme that we've seen Rav Salvechik many times before, and he develops it. There's even maybe perhaps a connection to Chanukah, a little bit in Yana de Yoma. So let's take a look. The very famous first pasuk of the parasha, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva Vayelech Harana. Yaakov left Be'er Sheva and goes to Haran. So Rav Salvechik just develops this idea that much of Yaakov's early life when he's developing his family, his whole family life that he develops really happens in the 20-plus years that he spends outside the land of Israel. And here his father, Yitzchak, was forbidden from ever leaving the land of Israel. And Avram, he came to Israel, hung out there. Okay, there was a famine, he had to go. But still, most of his life, most of his religious life, most of his life building his family was spent in the land of Israel. And here now Yaakov is sent and he's got to leave. So there, salvation develops. There must have been an element of him that's like sad and upset. Maybe God is telling me I'm not the man to really raise Klal Yisrael. I know Klal Yisrael is supposed to be in the land of Israel. So what's going on over here? Vayelech Harana. So this is what he has to say. Vayelech Harana. This is the sheet. Let me get the right sheet. You got to get the deluxe model. Okay. Vayelech Harana. He says like that. And this is a very important Yisod of Salvechik. Not only kept on stressing his whole life, but obviously you see the way he lived his life. He believed in this. And this is the question of Aliyah or bust, right? There's some people that have the perspective that Aliyah or bust. Like if you're living in Woodmere, Cedarhurst, feh, you're a second rate Jew. You're a third, maybe there's some truth to that. Maybe there's a little truth to that. But Rav Salvechik didn't believe in that. He didn't believe in that at all. And if you see the biggest proof that he believes that he himself never ended up making Aliyah. He lived his life. Even though he was a big Zionist, he never ended up moving. There was a whole discussion. He once applied to be chief rabbi, chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, if I'm not mistaken. One of those chief rabbis, he applied. He didn't get the job. So Lamaise, he's buried in Boston. He's buried in Boston. Same thing, not even that, right. So let's see. Vayelech Haran. Yaakov was perplexed by a conundrum. He had a suffix. He wasn't sure. The blessings of Abraham can only be manifest in Eretz Yisrael. When Yitzchak was faced with famine and wanted to leave Eretz Yisrael, he was barred from taking the step. If leaving the promised land was forbidden, why did Hashem tell Yaakov to do so? Yitzchak couldn't leave. Wasn't his mission bound up with the land of Israel? Yaakov surely asked himself, can I really succeed in building a community in Haran? Why should I leave behind the Nefesh Asher Asu B'char and all the adherents that Avram and Yitzchak had trained? Says Rav Salvechik, apparently it was Hashem's will that Yaakov begin anew with a community of 12, ultimately 70. In Haran, Yaakov was called upon to start a new community, a handful of children. Here Hashem teaches a fundamental truth about Judaism. Okay, this is what I love, Rav Salvechik. This is one throwaway pasuk. Yaakov left Vayetzei Bereshit Vayelech Haran. And Rav Salvechik now, he says, this pasuk is teaching me a fundamental principle about all of Judaism. What, Yaakov just left Bereshit and went to Haran. What's the fundamental principle? The wisdom and moral principles of Yiddishkeit are recognizable and understandable and doable and performable in every location, even on the moon. That's what he writes over here. Had Yaakov not, even on the moon you have to be from. You have to keep Shabbos even on the moon. Had Yaakov not left Be'er Sheva, the community would have been limited only to the land of Israel. Judaism must also be taught and observed to the T outside of Israel as well. And this is a little bit of a chizuk for us, all of us who unfortunately are still not yet zocha to live within the land of Israel. Sometimes this philosophy of aliyah or bust, so it tells us, we're in chutz laretz, we don't have to be so firm, we don't have to keep Yiddishkeit to the to the exact same. In Eretz Yisrael, okay, they're the holy rollers over there. They're the ones who are really doing Yiddishkeit l'chatchila. We're just doing Yiddishkeit b'di'evet. Now, to a degree, that's true. To a degree, it's true. But Rav Soloveitchik didn't feel that way. We have to feel like 100% l'chatchila, and we have to have chizik that every single aspect of Judaism implies 100% equally in Chutz Laretz as it does in Eretz Yisrael. Even though there is certainly a spiritual dimension to living in the land of Israel, and of course we certainly encourage everybody to try if you can. It's better to live there. You can do more mitzvahs. You have your spiritual life could be more rich and involved in so many ways, and the Yiddishkeit could affect you in many, many ways more. We should all be doing that and hoping to do that, and still we should still hope to be able to do that. But person shouldn't think that you can. And he's going to stress. Let's take it a step further. We're going to skip a little bit. We're going to come back to this. We're going to skip a little this. Take a look at the piece Jerry later on page 217 of this edition. Okay, Vayelech Arza Bnei Kedem. So Rav Soloveitchik again. There's Vayisa Yaakov Ragla Vayel. So after this whole incident that with the dream, so it says Vayelech Arza Bnei Kedem. Take a look here. He develops something also connected to Chanukah. He says, what message could there be in this surprising move of separating Yaakov from the land of his spiritual destiny? Despite the centrality of Eretz Yisrael, Judaism and its tenets have universal applicability and must endure even outside its borders. Eretz Yisrael is not a conditioned sine qua non for Jewish observance. Eretz Yisrael is not an absolute precondition for Jewish observance. Hashem wanted to teach Yaakov and Masa Ava Simon Labanim. Hashem wanted to teach Yaakov and through him all future generations of the Jewish people that even if we suffer galus and destruction, we can rebuild. This is going to be a very important theme of the whole parsha. While both Yaakov and Yosef had to experience galus, their experiences of galus were very different. Yaakov experienced the galus of poverty and hard work. Herbie, we got right here. Don't worry, Nissim's in Florida. Nissim's in Florida. He's hopefully listening in Florida on the WhatsApp. Yaakov experienced the galus of poverty until March. You could have that seat. Yaakov experienced the galus of poverty and hard work. Yosef experienced the galus of poverty as well, followed by that of great material success. He was a king. Yosef was the second in command in Egypt. Each of these was necessary in order to provide models of how a Jew should deal with each type of galus. Throughout history, Jews often suffered terrible poverty and oppression. This type of galus presents specific challenges to maintaining one's Jewish heritage. However, the challenge of the poverty and the affliction of galus, says Rav Soloveitchik, is not as big a challenge as the challenge of affluence of galus. He says Yaakov was the precursor, the one who taught Klal Yisrael how to survive with the oppression and poverty of galus. Yosef, his mission was to teach Klal Yisrael how to survive with the affluence of galus. Yosef said, Ha Elokim Yanes Shalom Paro, even if he was in the middle of Egypt. But even when he was the king, he says, listen, it's not about me. HaKadosh Baruch is the one who did it. Right? Hashem Chashava Latova. He always remembers the name Hashem, even when he's the ruler. On the other hand, Jews in many places today experience a galus where they enjoy great material success. Other places of Soloveitchik writes, this is a worse challenge. It's a harder challenge. Because when you feel like you have nothing, at least your natural inclination is to call out to Hashem when you have nothing. The problem is when you have everything, when you're rich and wealthy, you forget the Rabbeinu Shlom. Rav Soloveitchik says that's even a harder challenge. This presents a different kind of challenge for which the model of Yosef provides inspiration. All this he sees in the words Vayel Chatz Bnei Kedem. Not only that, Rav Soloveitchik also said that the Maccabim family, that was also, they were warriors. They were strong, they were fighters, they were mighty, but they taught the world how it's possible to be from and to keep Yiddishkeit even with your all your might, even though you're wealthy and successful. They had other challenges. They had spiritual challenges, but in terms of wealth and power and might, they had plenty. The Jews at the time of the Hellenist Greeks and at the time of the Maccabim, so they were examples for us about how even when you're strong and you have a mighty army, your mighty army also has to remember the Ribbono Shel Olam and keep up with the morals of the Jewish people. Like the IDF today, or Soloveitchik says that the Maccabim are the spiritual precursors of today's IDF. He writes elsewhere, and I should have brought it in, but I didn't have time to get to that piece. And let's continue Mamish off the very, very same idea. I didn't even realize this when I was preparing it. So the next pasuk, very, very famous pasuk, going back to the beginning of the parasha. Back to the beginning. Vayifka b'makom. Famous pasuk. Vayifka b'makom, vayolen shom. Now, vayifka b'makom, what do the words literally mean? He like bumped into the place. He bumped into it. He didn't realize he was going to the Makom HaMikdash, right? He was in Be'er Sheva, on his way out of Eretz Yisrael to Golos, but somehow he bumps into Yerushalayim in the middle. He bumps into the Har HaBayis. Vayifka b'makom. Now, Chazal on this pasuk, vayifka b'makom, say a lot of things. First of all, vayifka b'makom, this is the source that Yaakov Avinu instituted the prayer of Maariv. But before we get to that, so Rav Soloveitchik here, and Rav Soloveitchik stresses this many, many places, even not with Dr. Lustiger quotes over here. There's, again, Dr. Lustiger was limited. He's writing a book. He wants to write a book on the whole parasha. He couldn't write every single place in Rav Soloveitchik's writings where he writes about Makom. But this is a world-famous idea of Soloveitchik as well. I want to share with you something very, very personal that somebody shared with me when I was sitting shiva about this. And I'll tell you, this was is a game changer. In every shiva house I've been in so far since I sat shiva, which is probably about 50 of them, This idea has been a game changer. For every Avel that I tell this to is like amazed. Listen to what happens here. First, Vayifka b'makom. Listen to Rav Soloveitchik. The paradigmatic figure who found God despite his transcendence is the prophet Yechezkel. Yechezkel's prophetic revelation took place not in the Beis Hamikdash, not even in the land of Israel, but rather in a concentration camp in the midst of the bitter Babylonian exile, as you see in the pasuk I quote for you over here, Yechezkel Alf Alf, that's the Masa Merkava. Yechezkel famously prophesied about the Masa Merkava, one of the most powerful spiritual prophetic visions in the history of all of Tanakh. Masa Merkava. And where did it happen? Very far from Eretz Yisrael. What does it say? Vayi b'shloshim shana, baravi b'chamisha lachodesh, va'ani b'socha gola al nahar kvar. Niftechu shamayim vo'erem maros elokim. Yechezkel saw one of the most powerful prophetic visions of all time, where, in the midst of a bitter gullus, far away from the Beis HaMikdash in the land of Israel. Yet, despite the fact that it was a time of acute hester panim, v'efter v'hashamayim niftachu v'era maros elokim, the heavens opened and I saw a vision of God. When Yechezkel declared it a few prakim later, take a look, Yechezkel declared a few prakim later, "Vatisaini ruach." I have the pasuk here for you. "Vashma acharai kol rash gadol," and the wind lifted me. "Baruch kivod Hashem mimkomo." Blessed, right? We say two things in kedusha every morning when we say kedusha. Kadosh, 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 Hashem tzivagos, melol chol aretz kivodo. Wow, I see Hashem everywhere. Like at the time of a simcha, when a person feels close. Oh, I feel Hashem everywhere. But then there's a time of Avelos, a time of Hester Panim, a time of Tisha B'Av, and we say, then we use Yechezkel's words, Baruch Hash Kvod Hashem Mim Komo. Blessed is God from His place, from His distant place. Said Rav Soloveitchik one time, by an Avel, the reason you say HaMokom Yenachem Eschem is Vayifka B'Mokom, Vayifka B'Mokom. Because Yaakov met God on this journey when he was far away from the land. He was in Israel, but he was thrown out of his house. He's a wanderer. He's in the middle of nowhere. He has nothing. He was just robbed by Alifa, as the Medrash said. He had nothing. He was poverty. He was thrown. He was alone. He was mamish alone. Vayifka b'makom. He met God as makom. He met God as far away. That's like you say to an avel, Hamakom Yenachem Eschem. Even though you feel away from God, you feel far away from God, He's somewhere over there. Baruch Kvod Hashem Mim Komo, like Yecheskel said, God is sometimes far away, but He's there. He's in that Makom. He's far away. Oh. Yecheskel was referring to the huge distance between God and His people. Yaakov similarly encountered God in a time of travail. Penniless, fleeing his brother on the road towards exile, Yaakov also perceived Hashem as Makom. Now, on this topic of by an avel you say Hamakom, I want to tell you an amazing thing. That on the last morning of my Shiva, this Rabbi Yossi Adler from Renat and TABC, it's a whole long story, I don't want to get into the details, but he was very, very sick that week. He's been very sick on and off the last couple of years. He's very, very sick. He actually sat with my mom at 4 o'clock in the morning when my mom discovered my father. He came, he lives 3 houses away from my parents. He sat at 4 o'clock in the morning and sat with my mother there to try to calm her down after discovering my father. And then he couldn't even pay a Shiva call because for the next 2 days he was in the hospital, the whole 2 days. On the last morning of Shiva, he came before davening because they're not allowed to be around people, but he just wanted to came to pay a Shiva call before davening, like 6:30 in the morning. He showed up at the Shiva house. We're sitting over there getting ready for Shachris. He says, I can't stay because I'm not allowed to be around people, but I just want to share with you this one idea that I heard from Rav Soloveitchik about Hamakom Yenachem Eschem, which is not the idea that I just shared with you, a different idea. He said, it says about your parent during the lifetime, Al Yeshiv B'Makomo. It's also to sit in your father's seat. We all grew up, and the kids nowadays don't know these halachas, but when we grew up, they told us that your father's seat is actually, you're not allowed to sit there. You're not allowed to sit in your father's seat. It's a Gemara, Al Yeshiv B'Makomo. You're not allowed to sit in your father's makom. Said to Soloveitchik, when a parent passes away, you know what? You should try to dafke get into his makom. Get into his makom. Well, how do you get into your parents' makom? If there's a certain hanhaga tova that your father used to do, a certain mitzvah that your father used to do, or a certain hanhaga tova, try to grab onto that thing. And if you can get into your father's makom, that'll be a nechama to you. Because you're actually taking your father with you even afterwards. If you take a certain hanhaga tova, a certain mitzvah that he used to do. So hamakom yenachem eschem, we say by Shiva. If you can get into your father's makom, that'll be the biggest nechama for you. If you could take a piece of your father's makom, not only will you feel your father's with you all the time, but your father's going to get it every time you do something like that and you continue that minug, your father's neshama is going to get an aliyah from what you're doing. So not only you're going to have a nechama, a double nechama. Number one, the nechama is you're going to feel he's still with you. Number two, you're doing something to continue his neshama's aliyah. That's the biggest nechama ever. I told this over to my Rebbe, Rav Mordechai Willi. He had never heard it in the name of Rav Soloveitchik. He was like blown away. I once took Rav Shechter and Rav Tversky. Rav Tversky is Rav Soloveitchik's grandson. Rav Shechter is Rav Soloveitchik's biggest Talmud ever. Neither of them had ever heard this idea from Rav Soloveitchik. Unbelievable. But anyway, Rabbi Adler told me this last day Shiva. So because of this, I took upon myself two things in memory of my father. One's an easy one and one's a hard one. The easy one is Dafyomi. That's the easy one that I took in memory of my father. That's the easy one. Dafyomi. I took my father did Dafyomi. Whole story how my father got into Dafyomi because Elliot Gibber took him once to a CMI Shas because he had a box in Madison Square Garden. My father never learned Dafyomi. He said, come on, I'm going to Madison Square Garden. He'll sit in the box. It'll be good. And on the way home, on the train ride home, my father was sitting next to a guy. I forgot his name already. His grandson came over to me by Yoni's wedding. His grandson came over to me to remind me of the story that on the train ride home, it wasn't even at the Siyam HaShas, but on the train home, I think Friedman, Sidkas, this guy, Friedman. This guy, big gvir from Manhattan, a guy, Morris, Moshe Friedman, I don't know, Friedman, on the train was sitting. Said, Friedman says, my father, what are you so blown away? You can do the Dafyomi, you can do it. He said to my, you can do it. And like my father's thinking, can I do it? And he finished Shas 3.5 times because of that one time someone said to him, you can do it. So at my father's, at that day, at that moment, I took upon myself again. That was daf. My father was nifter daf memches and zvachim. Memches and zvachim. My father was nifter zvachim. Finished when it started menachas. So that's when I started the daf yomi in memory of my father. That was the easy one. The hard one the much harder thing that I took from my father is my father had this incredible gift of like every single person he met, Jew and non-Jew. It didn't matter. Every single person, like this Mishnah of being makabel people, b'sefer panim yafos, about really like giving your fullest attention and really treating each person, new person that you meet with like a full, to give them your full
countenance, like after davening, to like sit there and talk to people and actually really connect to people and be makabel every feeling of person. So Bali Neder, I took upon that's proven to be a lot harder than Dafyomi. Dafyomi is okay, an hour morning, 6 to 7. That, I know I'm doing that. That's like Yahar Bal Yavar. What's that?
In school or out of school?
It's hard everywhere. It's hard everywhere. Being makabel Paul Adnan, I say all the time, like I've never been to a shiva house where there was a line down the block. You know, there was a line down the block. My father had no idea he had this impact on people. He had no idea, but because he actually really gave every little person, big person, Jew, non-Jew, from, not from, didn't matter who it was, the janitor, didn't matter who it was, he gave every person, was a full saver upon him, Yafas, was like a full treatment. It wasn't like, oh, I just talked to you for 2 seconds, I'm on to the next guy already. You know, it's like he really spoke to people, he cared about people, you know, so that's the other thing I'm trying. That's proven to be much harder. Anyway, let's continue. So that's the way. One more thing. Makom, Rav Salavitch, is another thing of Ayifka by Makom. Another thing. Makom is tefillah. Makom is makom kavur of tefillah. Listen to what he says. Chazal interpret the word makom in the context of prayer, both in regards to Yaakov and Avram. Chazal indicate that Avram instituted shachris based on the pasuk Vayashkim Avram baboker el hamakom asher amad sham. Fascinating. Vayashkim Avram baboker el hamakom. And on this pasuk Vayifka bamakom by Yaakov, Yaakov was misakin arvis from Vayifka bamakom. So it's interesting. The word makom is the word that Chazal used to talk about tefillah. So Rav Salavitcher talks about how tefillah is not just this fly-by-night thing. It's not just this thing. Tefillah has to have a makom. The whole idea of makom kavua for tefillah. Tefillah is a, he likes to say, a rendezvous. This is Rav Salavitcher was fond of this word. Tefillah is a rendezvous with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a meeting. It's a set. Tefillah is supposed to be a set time, a set place. This rubs us, like with our American sensitivities, rubs us like the wrong way. Like I should be able to pray to God with whatever words I want, whatever time I want. And there is an idea like that in Yiddishkeit also with tefillah. But there's also an idea of, no, tefillah has a set time and a set place. Now, you can't just walk into the palace of the king whenever you want to say, oh, God, I'm here. Like we used to joke around, right? What's my benching? Rub, dub, dub, thanks for the grub, yay Hashem. I benched, okay. You know, that's my benching. No. There's a formal text. You can't just go to the Ribbono Shel Olam and say that. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu here. This is not your buddy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not your buddy. On the one hand, he is your buddy. You should be able to dive into whatever you want. But on the other hand, Chazal also said, no, there's a Shemoneh Esrei, there's a prayer, you have to first go into the Psukah Dezimra, and then you have Birkas Kriya Shema, and then Shema, then Kadosh, Kadosh, and then you build up, oh, now I'm ready to stand and talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a makom kavua for tefillah, and there's a zman kavua for tefillah, and there's a kviyas, and there's words that the rabbi said, no, you got to use these words. These are the words you got to use. And you can't play around with the words. You can't, oh, I don't like this text. I want my own text. So you can do that within the context of tefillah. There is an idea of that also, but there's also makom. So vayifka ba makom. Makom means it's a set place. It's a set time. The word makom has the connotation of an appointment, a date, a rendezvous in a certain place at a certain time. Prayer is our rendezvous with Hashem, which ideally, he sticks in the word ideally, which ideally takes place at a specific time and a specific place every day. Makom kavua. It's good to daven in the same minyan every day or in the same minyan every Shabbos, whatever you do. It's good. There's makom kavua. You have a certain kvius. You know, this is where I encounter Hashem. This is my Hashem place. Hashem is everywhere. I can encounter him everywhere. I can say anything to him anytime. Believe me, I'm the biggest proponent. Anytime I have a difficult conversation with anybody, I say a tefillah before the conversation. Every single time. Right? Yesterday I had to have a difficult conversation with somebody. Before the thing, I said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please give me the right words to say so that I should say the right thing. Always a tefillah. But there's also an idea called makom. Okay, let's continue. Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Each one is more powerful than the next. So in the dream, Yaakov, in the famous dream, he sees Malachi Elokim Olim V'Yordim Bo. He sees angels going up and down the ladder. Zuck the Medrash and Bereshis Rabba. What exactly did Yaakov, what exactly were these angels going up and down about? So famous Medrash, Bereshis Rabba. I have it for you over here on the sheet. Take a look. Yisrael Shebachas Pa'ar Atu. What does it mean that Hashem says about Yaakov Avinu? You are Yisrael. You are Yisrael Shebachas Pa'ar. That you are my, I'm so proud of you. With you, I glorify myself, Hashem says. What was it special about Yaakov Avinu that through Yaakov, Hashem glorifies himself. At hu she'ikunin shelcha chakuka lamala. You, Yaakov Avinu, a visage of your face. It's your face, a picture of your face that's tachas kiseh hakavod. That's up underneath the kiseh hakavod. Oilam lamala v'roam ukinin shelo. So the Malachim says the Medrash, we're going up the ladder and looking under the kiseh hakavod and saying, ah, we see a picture of Yaakov Avinu. V'yordim lamato motzim moslo yashin. And then they would go down the ladder and say, ah, it's the same picture of the guy under the kiseh hakavod. That's the same guy who's sleeping over there on Har Maria. Says of Salavitch, according to the Medrash, Yaakov's image was engraved on the kiseh hakavod. In Yaakov's dream, angels ascended the ladder to look upon the image, then descended the ladder to look upon Yaakov on earth, marveling at how the images were identical. When man sins, his external personality deviates from his pure inner self. Because Yaakov was without sin, the images of the ideal Yaakov etched on the throne and the real Yaakov on earth were exactly the same. Sin splits the personality into Tameh and Tahor components. Judaism desires the unity of the individual in keeping with the imperative to maintain the image of Hashem. Imitate Yodei. Yeah, he loves saying that, right? He throw in the Latin there, but to us regular people, meaning to imitate Hashem is the foundation of human existence. Since Hashem is one, our own goal must be to emulate this attribute as closely as possible. The Torah never accepted the dictum that the body is intrinsically impure. On the contrary, man must strive towards sanctification of the body. Judaism desires that man be internally consistent without conflict or contradictions. So the idea here of Salvechik is stating is that the ideal Yaakov and the real Yaakov were the same people. That's Yaakov who was free of sin, who was someone who was pure, his neshama and his guf, they were all one. There were no contradictions in Yaakov. So the heavenly Yaakov and the earthly Yaakov were exactly the same. They were the same. It was close enough. You know, when there's no one who's perfect, but it was close enough that the angels were able to say, "Wow, the view of Yaakov on the kiseh hakavod and the Yaakov down here on earth, they're mamish the same. The ideal Yaakov and the real Yaakov were the same people." So this is a message for us in the sense that our goal here on this earth, really two things. Our goal here is that the ultimate potential of our neshamos, of who we really could be and who we are down on this earth, the goal is that we should try to get it as close as possible. Our inside should be like our outside, the neshama, and even the guf, he says, right? Subjugating the guf in that way and calming down the passions and the taivas and controlling all of that for the sake of serving Hashem so that there should be no contradictions. The guf and the neshama shouldn't have to be fighting with each other. Of course, they're always fighting, but the idea is that the neshama should subjugate the guf. Once the neshama succeeds in subjugating the guf, then our ideal selves and our real selves on this earth are, look, you look at a tzaddik, you look at a holy person on this earth, so his face radiates exactly the same face that the Rebbeinu Shlom has for him upstairs. That's the goal. The goal is that each of us is supposed to strive that our this worldly Kamenetsky and the upper worldly Kamenetsky should be one and the same person. That's the goal. So that's the idea that our salvation sees in the words V'hine Malachei Elokim Olim V'yordim Bo. That's what the angels are going up and going down. They're going up and they're saying, "Wow, the heavenly visage of Yaakov and the earthly visage, mamas, the same thing. Unbelievable." Let's continue. So just the last couple of pieces here. He has just some very quick, beautiful ideas. Oh, first of all, I skipped one thing. Did I skip it? Yeah. I skipped one thing. I apologize. This is really related. It's out of order here. It's related to the last thing. I meant to say this before. In this place, let's just connect it because it's connected to what we just said before about Hamakom Yinachem Eschem, that sometimes the most powerful interactions that a person has with Hashem are dafka when a person feels down and out. Right? There are no atheists in a foxhole, we say. Dafka when Yaakov experienced Makom, Hashem was far away. He was Makom, Baruch Kavod Hashem Mimkomo, like Yecheskel said. He's far away. Hashem was far away. Yaakov was alone. He was thrown out of his house. He had nobody. He had nothing. Vayifka b'makom, he met Hashem in the darkness. And most often, people get closest to Hashem at times of crisis and tsar, as we said before. Even though, of course, you're supposed to feel Hashem adarav, when you're at a simcha, it should be even more you feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But most people, by a simcha, they're just partying themselves. They don't think about Hashem. That's what happens. But when you have nothing, when you're down and out, when you're broken, that's when you turn to Hashem. But that's what Rav Soloveitchik says. That's why Yaakov is the paradigm of experiencing Hashem through poverty and hard work. And Yosef was the king in Egypt. He experienced Hashem through power. And both of them, Jews and Gullahs, have experienced both. And now we're at a time of great affluence, but we have to remember not to forget Hashem through the affluence. But let's continue on this theme. So in the morning when Yaakov wakes up, he says, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how holy this place was. He says, oh my gosh. Hashem's revelation at times of crisis from the depths of despair and distress is a basic principle of Judaism. Sometimes Hashem does not reveal himself to the contented soul. He reveals himself to the mute soul, battered by weariness and exertion. Sometimes Hashem reveals himself to one who grieves for the ruin of his temple and the destruction of its altars, or someone who's in Avelos, while avoiding one who dedicates his temple and stands at the side of his offering. Sometimes he does not reveal himself to the rational individual, but to the one who is confused, who is bankrupt, and has lost his track of his world. From time to time, man's salvation comes out of distress. Even the most spiritually elevated members of the Jewish people first encountered Hashem at a time of raging fear, helplessness, or distraction, when they were not anticipating such an encounter and were thoroughly surprised by it. Yaakov comes close to Hashem in his dream, a nocturnal dream, while sleeping on the cold stones of the Makom. Moshe encountered a burning bush at a time when he's pasturing Yisro's flock, entirely devoted to this simple everyday application. Yecheskel sees visions of Hashem in exile on the Har Kvar in the Golos, full of quaking and horror. Judaism has firmly established the halachic principle that even when man confronts an unchangeable evil decree coming from Hashem, even when his rejected prayers are thrown back in his face, he must see Hashem and conjoin with him in spite of the tragic reality that weighs him down. Hashem reveals himself through suffering and tragedy when the individual or the community is in trouble and distress. This is mamish following what we said before in Hamakom. Okay, that's really a continuation of what we had before. But anyway, Rav Soloveitchik says something unbelievable on the pasuk of Elokei Avram Avicha v'Elokei Yitzchak. This is something that had he not said it, we might have said this is blasphemous. We might have said, because he's talking about why is the Torah is called, we've said this all the time, Elokei, what does the pasuk say? Elokei Avraham Avicha v'Elokei Yitzchak. Right. Hashem is the God of Avram and the God of Yitzchak. Now, we always understand this to mean, okay, what do you mean he's the God of Avram and the God of Yitzchak? We've said it so many times, we say it every morning, Shemoneh Esrei, right? First words of Shemoneh Esrei, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak. He's the God of Avram. What do you mean he's the God of Avram? Now, we always understood that to mean that he ruled over Avram. I mean, Avram discovered him, and Yitzchak discovered him, but when we always understand, I mean, the God of Avram, the God of Yitzchak, it means he was the ruler. He ruled over them. They discovered the fact that he ruled over them. Rav Soloveitchik said, if you look at the word, Elokei Avram, it means Avram owned Hashem. Elokei Avram. He was the Elokim that belonged to Avram. He was the Elohim that belonged to Yitzchak. What do you mean Hashem belonged to Avram? Hashem belonged to Yitzchak? Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak. Listen to this unbelievable shot. Unbelievable. Avram's belief in God's existence solidified when he was 40 years old. Yet, Hashem never revealed himself to Avram until he ordered Avram to enter the land of Canaan at the age of 75. We spoke about this a few weeks ago. Imagine the difficulties Avram faced during that long interim period. From age 40, when he discovered God on his own, till age 75, where Hashem spoke to him for the first time. As he attempted to defend his newfound faith, his peers surely scoffed at him, derisively inquiring, Avram, you say there is a God, a supreme king? Have you ever seen him? Have you ever spoken to him? Avram searched for God without Hashem's help, proving Hashem's existence through nature. Avram can neither point to nor display miracles to prove God's existence. because none of his contemporaries searched for him, God was, in a sense, ownerless, hefker, until Avram claimed him as his own, in accordance with the laws of finding lost objects, as laid out in the second chapter of Bava Metzia, Elu Metzias, if you remember, acquiring lost objects. Upon close examination, says Rav Soloveitchik, the Torah recounts very few miracles surrounding the lives of the Avos. The only truly supernatural occurrence was the birth of Yitzchak. And this miracle cannot compare, for example, with the drama of the splitting of the Yamsuf of the Red Sea. Sarah's miracle was hidden, not as spectacular as the plagues or as Matan Torah. Nor were there outright, that's what the Pasuk says, Va'erol Avram Elisav El Yaakov Bekel Shekai Ushmi Yud Kevav Ke Lo Nadati Lahem. I never did any open miracles for the Avos, and yet they still followed me. And Moshe Rabbeinu, you're saying, where are you? Nor were there overt miracles in Yitzchak's life or in Yaakov's life. To the contrary, Yaakov's life was beset by problems. Esav's hatred, the machinations of Lavan, and the selling of his beloved son Yosef. Yet, despite the obstacles and despite no open miracles, our forefathers promulgated God's name and fathered the chosen people. It is for this reason, said Rav Soloveitchik, that Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak are constructed in the possessive form. This usage suggests that each of our forefathers retained a type of ownership, a kinyan in Hashem, as it were. Unbelievable. They found a lost Hashem. So they were owners. When you find a lost object, you own it. It's a metziah. You're an owner. Unbelievable. Although we assert that Hashem owns everything, obviously we know, La Hashem Aretz Umeloa, God owns everything, man can reciprocally attain ownership rights in God himself. The patriarchs, the Avos, attained this ownership through their self-sacrifice, through the difficulties they endured. What a fascinating idea this is. We never think about something. Again, he doesn't mean that we own Hashem. That's not what he means. That's not what he means. What do you mean we own Hashem? It's ridiculous. He doesn't mean that. What he means is that a person who can discover Hashem without hidden miracles, that's such an incredible accomplishment that he should feel like an owner. He should feel like, wow, look what I accomplished. Look what I got for myself. And Hashem never came to me in a miracle. He never split the sea from me. He never did that, but I'm still sticking with him because I believe, because I have that emunah pshuta, I have that because my father did and my grandfather did. That was Avram and Yitzchak Yaakov's greatness. There were never miracles in their times. They never had open miracles. Avram Yitzchak Yaakov never saw the splitting of the sea. They never saw the 10 plagues. They never saw Hashem reveal himself like Matan Torah. They never had that. And yet they stuck. That's why it's Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. That's what it means. It means the God that was discovered by Avram, the God that was continued by Yitzchak, the God that Yaakov, through all of his trials and tribulations, he stuck with him. Through all the difficulties of his life, it was like an ownership. I grew, I acquired, look who I became. That's why it's called Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. It's like the Avos found a lost, they found something lost and acquired it. So that's why it's called an ownership rights. Rav Soloveitchik says in quotes.
They purchase it through suffering?
Exactly. They acquired it through discovering him where nobody else did. They found him. And when you're a Motzei Aveda, you have kinyanim. You're of kinyanim and lost objects. Yeah, you have to be machris. But if the person doesn't come, you're an owner now. Sure. So the Avos, by finding the lost Ribono Shalom, became like owners. Unbelievable. Al Pidrush. Again, let's not get literal. Let's not get literal. You know, we don't own. It didn't mean we own our Kaddish Baruch. It didn't mean it like that. Oh, we have time for maybe one more. There's a lot here. Okay, we'll do a quick summary of the last pieces here. Quick summary. So he discovers when Yaakov went down to sleep at night, he didn't realize the kedusha of the place that he was in. It was only in the morning, right? Ochein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh v'anochi lo yadati. Then he says, "Ma nora makom hazeh." How awesome is this place? So Soloveitchik said, when he went to sleep, he didn't see any significance to these bare stones. When he awoke the next morning, it was a different place.
What is the nature of the singularity of Eretz Yisrael? In truth, there are other places in the world that match or may surpass its beauty. What makes the stones of the Kotel different from limestone anywhere else? Other countries have the same cold stones. The answer is that Eretz Yisrael has a quality of Kedusha that attracts Bnei Yisrael to it. The stones of the Kotel possess this Kedusha. The Jew must be able to feel Kedusha to recognize its greatness. You know, Rav Soloveitchik, we talked about, learned with the Lubavitch Malamed when he was very young. So I'll quote here the words of that my Rebbe taught me from Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman Mibreslov said that a real Talmud Chacham is somebody who looks like everybody else. He looks like every other rabbi. He looks like every other Jew. But underneath, he's fire. Underneath, he's fire. That's a Talmud Chacham. He said, Eretz Yisrael, on the outside, looks like every other land. It has snow, it has rain, it has stones, it has grass, it has trees. On the outside, it looks like every other beautiful place. But underneath, Reb Nachman said, it's fire. Underneath, it's fire. Yaakov, when he bumped into this place, he sat there, he went down to sleep. He didn't realize, he thought it was a place. He woke up in the morning, he had this vision, he had this dream. He started to look around and see, this is the place, this is the Makom HaMikdash. Oh my gosh, I didn't realize, Manu HaMakom HaZeh. Because to see Kedusha sometimes, you have to look a little bit beneath the surface. It's not something you're going to see on the outside. The outside, a person can come out. I don't feel anything. I came to the Kotel the first time, I don't feel anything. It's a stone wall like any other wall. But you see Jews coming from all over the world. They come, they stay there for a few seconds, they look at the wall. There's people who say, they say they go to that place and they feel something like they never felt in their life before. The first time you see the Kotel. But it takes a spiritual sensitivity. You can go there and feel nothing also. You can go there and say, what is it? It's nothing. You can go to Eretz Yisrael, I don't see anything in Eretz Yisrael. I don't see. What's so great about it? I don't see. So the chiddush of the fact that Yaakov only saw it the next morning is that the Kedusha is not something that you meet the first time. It's not something you see right away. A real Talmud Chacham is not somebody who parades himself and masquerades himself around like a Talmud Chacham, Reb Nachman said. A real Talmud Chacham is you have to look inside, you have to look beneath the surface. On the outside, it looks like everybody else. But on the inside, he's fire. So said Reb Nachman. Eretz Yisrael on the outside looks like every other land, but inside it's fire. Oh, the last point. Okay, three quick last points. Okay. Ahi baboker v'inehi leah.
The red zone.
Exactly, the red zone. We're in the red zone. So, famous medrash in Eicha Rabasi, where at the time of the Churban HaMikdash, Yirmiyahu goes to the Kivrei Avos. There's a kinnah about this on Vayikonin and Yirmiyahu. Right? He goes to Avraham Avinu and says, Daven for your people that are going to Golos. He goes to Yitzchak, Daven for your people. He goes to Yaakov, Daven. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, no, sorry, I'm not doing anything. Finally, he goes to Rachel. And there's two different versions, the version in the kinnas and the version in the medrash. You could do this for homework. There's a long Friday night tonight. You got plenty of time for homework. Eicha Rabasi, take a look at the medrash. You got to see the whole medrash, Eicha Rabasi. Finally, Rachel says, Avraham Avinu says, I was willing to sacrifice with my son. Hashem says, sorry, no, I'm not going to redeem the Jewish people in your merit. Yitzchak says, I was willing, no, I'm not going to do it. Yaakov, no. Rachel says, I gave over the simanim, I gave away my whole future to my sister so she shouldn't be embarrassed. I gave away the simanim to Leah. Hashem says, Mini kolech mi bechi ve'inayich min dimal ki yesh sachal v'losech. In the schus of a sister not wanting to embarrass her sister and being willing to sacrifice her entire future so my sister shouldn't be embarrassed, Hashem says, Mini kolech mi bechi. How far we have to go to make sure you don't embarrass somebody. That's the worst, right? Embarrassing worst is like, it's like killing somebody. So that's the schus, says Rav Soloveitchik. Said Rav Soloveitchik on the pasuk, Vayehi baboker v'inehi leah. This is the merit that ultimately is going to cause the geul of Klal Yisrael. The zchus is kol b'ram nishma nehi b'chisam Rachel mavaka al banah me'ana lihinachim. Rachel's act of compassion towards an unfortunate sister evidently carried more weight than the akedah. Can you imagine this? That's what the Medrash says. Just not embarrassing my sister was a greater act in the eyes of Ribbono Shel Olam than Akedas Yitzchak. Carried more weight with Ribbono Shel Olam than the other more dramatic, heroic acts of our ancestors. Hashem accepted Rachel's sacrifice
as the most sublime. And therefore, in Yirmiyahu's prophecy, he addressed himself exclusively to that. And Vayar Hashem Kisnu Aleh, an unbelievable vart. Unbelievable vart. This is an unbelievable vart about marriage. If you have another 30 seconds, if you have to go, please don't stay. Don't. Vayar Hashem Kisnu Aleh, right? What does the Torah say? The Torah says Yaakov loved Rachel more than Leah. And then it says, and Hashem saw that Leah was hated. What? Yaakov didn't hate Leah, he just loved Rachel more. So, Rav Soloveitchik has one take on this. Rabbi Krohn once spoke here in DRS, and he said over a Moirud Gavard on this, about marriage. It doesn't matter what you said, it matters what she heard.
Perception is reality.
Do I look fat in this dress?
It doesn't matter what you said, it matters what she heard. And Yaakov loved Rachel more than Leah. Vayar Hashem kisnu Leah. Yaakov only meant to love Rachel more than Leah, which by itself is not right. Is not right. That was not right. But what, how did Hashem treat it? Kisnu Leah. Leah felt hated. He didn't hate her, but that's the way Leah felt. Said Rabbi Krohn, doesn't matter what you said. It matters what she heard. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what you said. It matters what she heard. Vayar Hashem, God didn't consider it that he loved Rachel more than Leah. God considered it Kisnu Leah. She was hated. Said of Soloveitchik, what do you mean he didn't hate her? But Yaakov loved Rachel, but he didn't hate Leah, despite the implication of this pasuk. His bond to Leah merely suffered by comparison with Rachel. His relationship with Rachel was singular, unique, and qualitatively different than his love for Leah. So Vayar Hashem Kisnu Leah. It doesn't matter what you say, it matters what she heard. Two last things. Rachel says to Yaakov, give me kids. Havali banim. Very strange. What do you mean? As if he was the one not giving me kids? Give me kids. So Soloveitchik develops over the idea that he's developed on many parashas before, and that parenting in Yiddishkeit is not what the world thinks parenting is. Parenting just doesn't just mean raising children and getting them clothing and buying them food and taking them on vacations and making sure they're happy. I hear it all the time. I just want my kid to be happy. I don't want my kid to be happy. That's not Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit, a parent is, I want my kid to grow. I want my kid to develop. I want my kid to... Parenting in Yiddishkeit is teaching, is educating. That's parenting in Yiddishkeit. Teaching, midos, menschlichkeit. Teaching Torah, teaching a life of Torah and mitzvahs. That's the definition of a parent for Rav Soloveitchik. I don't have the time now. And the last thing is, Lavan hated Yaakov so much that not only did he want to afflict Yaakov, not only did Lavan want to bring him back, not only did he want to kill Yaakov, Lavan wanted to annihilate his own daughters and his own grandchildren. That's how Meshuggah, the hatred of the Goyim is for us, said Rav Soloveitchik. They won't even kill themselves. They'd rather blow themselves up to kill us. So don't try to, says Rav Soloveitchik, don't try to think there's any rational or normal meaning in the hatred that the non-Jews have. It's not about Zionism. It's not about Israel. It's not about anything. Lavan wanted to destroy his own daughters and grandchildren. He was Medayik from the Psukim. He wanted to kill his own grandchildren because it was so irrational. His hatred of Yaakov was so irrational. So don't try to explain it away. So he just said that's what I'm talking. Anyway, we learned a lot of important things. I didn't want to end on that note so much, but okay. But we learned that even in Chutz La'aretz, and even though we haven't seen any miracles, Vayifka b'makom, we should realize there's a makom there, even though we're far away, and we have the potential that our visual on this earth should work hard that our visual on this earth should match our visual in the on the Kisei HaKavod. Have a wonderful Shabbos.